And I remember all these deer surrounding.
The UPRN family of shows would like to take a moment to thank our loyal listeners for tuning in to UPRNTalkRadio.com along with 107.7 FM New Orleans. Broadcasting on multiple platforms like Live 365, Ustream, and Shoutcast has made the UPRN the longest running, highly rated, and best source.
Rocket. Rocket.
I'm shaking.
The Church of Mavis.
Oh, I'm stoked. I'm stoked. I'm ready. And awesome. This is awesome.
The Church of Mavis.
Oh, I'm stoked. I'm stoked. I'm ready. And awesome. This is awesome.
That was Joe Montado just brought us in, our producer. We got Wham here with us, and me, Jeffrey Pritchett. Welcome back to the Church of Mavis radio show, our first show of 2016. Been gone since November. It's a little strange not doing a show in that long, but I needed the break, so feel a lot better, more invigorated, more my fire's lit up, and we're ready to rock and roll for 2016, and it's an election year as well, and we're going to bring in the reign of Bernie Sanders, and of course, continuing to upset Republicans as we go on air all through 2016. Rock and roll, baby. But it's good to be back. I've had a long, good vacation. Been hanging out with my new Russian girlfriend, Lana, who she won't talk on air if I tried to, but Joe heard her voice earlier, and people seen her picture, so she's real, and I didn't order her from a catalog. So.
Oh, please.
Been having a good time with that. It was good to – I've been single for a while, so it was good to have a new girlfriend to hang out with me Christmas and my birthday and New Year, and – she's here with me now. We're hanging out, and she's listening. So it's been good luck for me, finally, in some regard. But nonetheless, we just ushered in Mercury retrograde. Just started on the 5th, I believe, to the 25th. So hopefully we survive that little jog with Coyote right there, running backwards. So let me see. I forgot the call sign stuff. I had to dig for that earlier because, okay. You're listening to 107.7 New Orleans and 105.3 Henderson Point, Mississippi. I had a few books just to plug really quick from Titan Books. The first one is Crimson Peak, that movie by Guillermo del Toro. Excellent. It's the written novel of that movie, Crimson Peak. Love Del Toro. Of course, he did Hellboy and Pacific Rim. Another book, Predator Incursion by Tim LeBon, L-E-B-B-O-N is his last name. And, of course, that's Predator, like, you know, the space alien that comes down and hunts people for fun. That's a fiction novel about that. Here's another book, Too Soon Dead by Michael Kurland, an Alexander Brass mystery. And let me see, Hack by Kieran Crowley. Always have trouble saying Crowley. Crowley, always mix it up. But he's been on the show before about the second weird Zodiac killer guy a long time ago. There was apparently the Zodiac killer, and then there was some other weird copycat one. He did a book about him that was pretty creepy. His new book is Hack. And the last book here, Echo Endgame by Danny Ware, genre-defying roller coaster ride. And that's a starred review. those are all by Titan Books. Check out titanbooks.com. A lot of weird, cool books there. All right, let's see. What else? Oh, I briefly wanted to talk about, thanks to Gabe in the chat room for reminding me about Deadwood. That show used to be on HBO, you know, the Western, that everybody cussed in it like a sailor, but it was still a great show. And everybody, they canceled that show. And that show had Ian McShane in it, you know, Al Swearengen. And for some reason, HBO canceled that show when it was doing amazing. Like, Ian McShane won a Golden Globe for that show, for playing the pimp guy in the brothel. But anyway, it was, I think something weird happened at HBO where someone who owned it, got, his family got murdered, and he got rid of all the, like, violent programming. And it was really weird, but they got rid of that show, and everybody got mad. Well, finally, they're going to be making a Deadwood movie from HBO. So that just released recently. So that's good news about Deadwood, some closure, because I've hated HBO since they canceled that show. It was like the best Western ever. Like, if you imagine the best Western movie you've ever seen turned into a show weekly. It was amazing. Oh, yeah, one more thing. They're rebooting Tales from the Crypt with M. Night Shyamalan. The guy did Sixth Sense and The Visit and Unbreakable and all that stuff. They're rebooting on TNT the Tales from the Crypt. You know, Crypt Keeper here, Tales from the Crypt, from HBO and all that. So some good show news. But let's get to our guest. We got Wham here with us. Wham, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
I thought you were. I figured you were. But tonight's guest is Don Oscar Miro Quesada. Did I say that right, Don? I'm from Georgia. Say that one good time for us.
Miro Quesada, yet you pronounced it perfectly. You can just call me a friendly holographic projection. You can call me Oscar, brother. Everything's cool.
Oscar would be good for my Georgian-ness. Well, it's great to have you here. I've been listening to Healing Light from Sounds True and love it. I've been listening to that all week. And, of course, you sent me the book Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life, and really enjoyed that. And I love getting people on about this kind of information. It's hard to find a lot of times, but we've had a great deal of guests on about it. And when I saw your audiobook, I came across it, and I liked it. And that's how I came across you. And I'm always great to add someone else to our lineup that's here to spread, you know, ancient shamanic knowledge of sorts.
Well, I'm so, very...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Great to have you.
I'm very pleased that the wisdom tradition that I've been sanctioned to bring into the modern Western world touches the hearts of people that don't have the opportunity to do a shamanic apprenticeship in the bush or in the Andes or in the coastal areas of developing nations. So thanks for having me on and for taking the time to read Lessons in Courage and give a listen to Healing Light. A lot of the radio hosts don't put the time in, and that means a lot to me. So thanks a lot, Jeffrey.
Great to have you here. At first, if you could tell us a bit about you. Were you born in Peru? Is that where you're originally from?
Born and raised in Peru. Born in the district of Lima called Lince. And then as an infant, my father worked for the public health institutes. He was stationed in very remote rural areas in the central Amazon in Pucallpa, and then in the northern coastal village of Chiclayo, and then in Huaraz in the central Andes in the highlands. So from age 1.5 to age almost 5, I lived with indigenous populations of Peru. My mother was Italian, and but came to the United States at a very early age, where my father met her when he was going to university, and then kidnapped her and took her down to Peru, and she never left. So that is why I speak English so well. Pero mi primer idioma es el español y también hablo quechua. So I do speak Spanish and Quechua, which is the indigenous dialect of the Andes, you know.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And where are you located now?
Well, when I'm here in the United States, if I'm not doing apprenticeships around the country, I live in West Palm Beach, believe it or not, in South Florida, because it's close to Miami, and I can get on a plane quickly and go into the bush, because I do. We have programs we do in the southeastern Amazon rainforest in the area of the Madre de Dios River in the Tambopata rainforest.
Oscar, I'm up here in the panhandle of Florida, in Marietta.
So we're neighbors, basically, man.
Yes, you're at the bottom and I'm at the top.
Sounds good. Well, maybe one day our paths will cross in the flesh, brother. Do you mind if I open up our dialogue by just offering a prayer in Quechua, just to align ourselves with the awakening of this shamanic medicine for the audience?
Sure,
I'd like
absolutely
to do that. Thank you. So let us take a couple of deep breaths, align ourselves, and bring our hearts to a place of gratitude for the opportunity to commune with the presence of a wisdom far greater than ourselves, which is the one source, the great originating mystery. Haili wilka hanak pachamanta saiwa. Tiyayukui tetemuyoh hatun kaipang. Pachakamak nyokakmi sonkuipi. Tupakui kausaipi kawakui. Kausainiyoh muinainiyoh kanchainiyoh hamuraiku ina. Nyokaiku kanchai parunakuna pachamamak churinkuna. Hama ina sonkok tikak. Futuininta apumui runakunak. Haili ayu runakunak.
So, languages are, I mean, if you learn, and I know you know this because you know more than one, but languages are like different ways of living the world and, living in the world and seeing reality. Mm-hmm. So, I think that there's a lot more beauty in English than we allow, than we permit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, especially since I've studied like Old English, you know, some of the older forms of it, but there's so much, there are so many other ways of experiencing reality in other languages. So I do appreciate that power, especially when I'm doing my own meditations and so forth.
Excellent. Yeah, well, words are bridges between worlds. You know, we understand in the shamanic wisdom ways of our Aboriginal people that, you know, consciousness, which is the equivalent of soul, begets or structures matter, that it all begins with awareness before it gives rise to the material world, right? And also that language begets reality. So if our awareness or our consciousness is a priori or has primacy over the material world, and our language structures the reality of that material world, then the third component, ritual, begets relationship. Because if you look at the natural world, everything is ritualized. All of our species perform rituals. And that's why ceremony and ritual is such an inextricable component of all shamanic healing, because it develops relationships with both seen and unseen allies.
Right, exactly.
Spirit helpers.
Right,
yeah.
Right. I'm in the process of trying to write some material about that exactly. And in fact, I was just getting to the point in my manuscript where I was talking about sound and how important sound is. Just because sound, in order to make a sound, there is the assumption, the presumption that there is a listener. You know, there is something that to which you can transmit that sound to or through, and that becomes that sound becomes the bridge that is created that allows that relationship to happen.
Exactly.
He's back.
Hey guys, I'm back.
He's back.
Can you? I heard you talking. It was like got really low. Was it low to you too, Oscar? Or was that?
Yeah, it was. She seemed to fade out a little bit.
Yeah, it was like really low. But I'm back. Sorry about the dog thing. I didn't count that into the equation.
That's quite all right. He actually made a really good point with the dog. So that was super
it's cool. Part of the living earth. You know, it's part of life. And that this is about shamanism, so I'm cool with it. With the dog was basically saying, "I'm here too. Include me, kids."
Right. Exactly. Hey. Look. I'm here.
There you go. Then you got really loud. Yeah. They bark at everything. They drive. Like I have a neighbor named Ernie who's really cool. This older guy, and I swear he walks by every day with his dog, and they see him every day, and they bark. And it's like I understand why they're barking, but on some level it makes me nuts. I'm like,
It can.
It's like he walks by every day. He's not going to kill us.
Well, and they're also just saying, hey. And I mean,
yeah,
dogs, like, live in the now, you know. They're not going to remember, like,
yes, the
day before. You know, he walked by yesterday. It's more like, it's a Zen thing. It's like, now, bark. So.
Yeah, I have found that animals, when they are repetitive in their barking or other sounds, are trying to train us. They're trying to train us humans to pay attention and stop however we're doing our earth walk in an unconscious way. It's possible that guy that's walking by that your dog's constantly barking at isn't really it's not, you know, being fully aware of the fact that the dog is there and that there's, you know, trees and flowers around or maybe some other things in the environment that need his attention. And I guarantee you that if this person who's in a routine in his walk stops and changes his vibration, his field, that your dog is also going to say, okay, you paid attention. I have to stop barking now. I'll stop barking. Just notice that I'm here. I found that animals are very wise when they want humans to change their habitual ways. They'll make a scandal until we do.
Definitely.
You know?
I'll have to get him to do something different.
Yeah, it's up to us humans to be the students, not the dogs.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I wanted to talk to you about is just briefly about some back history about me. When I was 17, I had a big awakening because I had testicular cancer and I had to go through chemo. And I've been healed from that for like 25 years or more. But shortly after that, I say during chemo and stuff is when I found the universe. It's when I became conscious that there was more going on than meets the eye, because that stuff is pretty rough. And it kind of woke me up that they're, you know, to a higher power, so to speak. But anyway, shortly after that, like a few years later, my dad died, and that was another turning point, because I was like, man, I went through cancer, at least I'm healed from it, but now my dad's going to die? What's next, falling space debris? So,
I
but
hear
anyway,
you.
Something happened, and I saw a being of light, a person made of light with a friend in the cloud tops. And since then, I've seen a lot of weird UFO stuff. One time I saw some Native American ghosts or spirits, like they were ghosts dressed in full Native American attire. And then as years progressed, just recently, a few years ago, I was feeling kind of negative, and I put on some DVD Bible. And I was raised in the South, and I think the Bible has some truth in it, but I definitely wouldn't consider myself. I have trouble saying I'm a Christian. I study a lot of shamanism and stuff, but it seems like the Christian part of me is always trying to hang on to me because my dad was a Baptist preacher, so it's like I'm always trying to kick it away, and it's always there anyway.
I understand.
But anyway, I turned that audio DVD Bible on, and it sometimes when I listen to it and stuff like that, I do feel better. It's like some of it positively affects me for some reason. I've noticed that with the Bible, even though there's some of it in there that's completely nuts, and I'm still trying to figure out. But anyway, something told me to go outside, and leaving the house, I saw two beings of light just flying through the air, like two people, like they're just like next to each other, hanging out, like they would be walking through a shopping mall, except they're flying away from my house to the heavens. And I've talked to some other, you know, shamans and stuff, and we've talked about luminous beings, and some of them talked about they can travel in spheres, and basically I believe that on some level, or that they are us without our bodies. What I'd like to know, Oscar, is what is your view on luminous beings and death and the afterlife, and is that what we truly are these beings of light when we're out of these bodies?
I would say yes, 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 and yes to everything. And I also have some questions to better respond to your inquiry. And so this experience with these two beings of light that floated up was how soon after your father's death?
Well, the first being of light that I saw in the cloud tops was very shortly after his death. Because something actually happened to where I had his ashes, and me and some friends were playing around on the Ouija board and asked it where to take the ashes, and it spelled Blacktop Mountain, and I didn't know what that was at the time, and none of my friends had ever heard of that either, but it turned out that it was a place me and my dad went to when I was a kid. And also, he went to a military school there, Raven Gap in Georgia. And so me and my friends loaded up and took the ashes there and put them out over the mountainside. And I don't play with a Ouija board anymore, but then we actually got lost on the mountain, asked it where to go. It told us where to go. After I put his ashes out, it spelled out, "I love you," and we, like, all cried. And it was... Oh, it was authentic because none of my friends had ever heard of Blacktop Mountain, and they knew nothing about Blacktop Mountain. At the time, I didn't even know what Blacktop Mountain was until I remember later after the board said it. But that first being of light experience happened after that, and the one I just told you about happened a few years ago.
Yeah, well, I know that area, Raven Gorge, quite well. I've done a lot of work in that area. I did the harmonic convergence not far from there at Thomas Knob up in North Carolina. That whole Four Corners area is very familiar to me. There's a lot of power there. As well, there's a concentration of anomalous phenomena that is historically very relevant when it comes to parting the veil. As you well know, This third-dimensional mind space that we inhabit as two-legged is really just a fraction of really what's out there in the universe and the cosmos. And we can move through dimensions with proper training and preparation, and sometimes through spontaneous eruptions of this other parallel universe into our consciousness, based on severe trauma, sadness due to loss of a loved one, and other forms of emotional intensity that we encounter that ruptures or breaks the mirror, breaks the illusion, so we are able to access these other worlds that really are part and parcel of our own, physical experience. Yet they don't make themselves available because we have not entrained our consciousness to be able to befriend them, to enter into relationship with them. And this mystics and shamanic adepts from time immemorial have developed a series of psycho-spiritual disciplines that allow us to, in a controlled manner, enter states of transcendence that allows communion with these shining ones, which I call them, these light beings. And sometimes when we do not do it consciously or in a disciplined manner, and our soul, they are light beings.
Really consciousness-altering sounds. And apparently many of them were, they were often buried with people. They're kind of like ancestor vessels. Or do you know what I'm talking about?
Very okay. much so, of course. Okay. As a matter of fact, I can let you listen to one after the break. I have a couple myself. They're pre-Columbian ceramic whittling vessels that are used in ceremonial activation of higher frequencies of consciousness. And sometimes they're filled with either water or with acha, which is fermented corn beer. And then by tilting them a little bit, they make these otherworldly sounds. And they generate an altered state of consciousness, really.
Right. There's a woman where I live. There is a woman who has become the custodian of a large number of these vessels, and apparently she is a native here of northern, you know, American extraction, and she's actually been trained in the Lakota tradition, even though that's not her blood lineage. But the blood lineage that she's a part of,
are they authentic pre-Columbian? Are they like pre-Inca?
They are authentic pre-Columbian.
Okay.
Yes, they are authentic pre-Columbian, and she was gifted with about almost 15 of them from a shaman in Colombia, who taught her how to use them, and taught her a variety of ways to use them. She was
ourselves provide visions to the people who are using those same vessels today in this time and space. So, you know, basically what we're doing is tapping into a non-local experience of being universal being. And it's extremely powerful as a tool to propel the people beyond their own self-absorbed narcissistic concerns. It connects us with a much wider pool of service and of heart. And that's very helpful for our planet, you know.
What I was getting was that the healing that has been occurring actually in my body. Part of the reason I went was because I've been having some physical issues, and I know that the physical issues, because when I go to the doctor, there's nothing wrong, you know. So I know myself well enough to know that my physical issues are as a result of blocks in myself, and they're emotional things, you know, spiritual things. And so I actually specifically went to have some of those things sort of shaken up a little bit. And it actually kind of blew my mind the first time I was exposed to it. It was kind of intense. But one of the messages that I got was that this has to do with the earth, was that in the same way that the body in the process of its healing and transformation, in the same way that it sometimes has to go through like a purification process or a cleansing process, and it's not terribly comfortable sometimes. It's not been horrible, but you know, I have to pay attention to what I'm doing and try to be balanced. But in the same way, there's something that's going on with the planet, you know, and the planet is getting ready for its own shift or change. And
it's not the first time that has happened.
No, it isn't.
The first time. There have been these cycles that have occurred since 3.5 billion years ago, the first birthing. Like you described the purification, it's also a type of birthing, because if you look at a woman who's giving birth to a child, it's a pretty messy affair. It doesn't look like it's bringing life into the world. I mean, it's painful, it's bloody, it's pretty, in a way, a difficult initiation or rite of passage. And it, 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 the does not come without hardship. So whether it's a purification or a birth, in both cases, a new life is seeking to be manifest. And this is, I agree wholeheartedly with you, Sam, this is exactly what is happening on a global scale, you know, on a planetary scale. Our prophecies speak about this, and we, you know, we are prepared for the ride. Sometimes not going to be that smooth, yet we will emerge out of it, a new species, a new planetary family. I am convinced of that.
So it's kind of an evolution of the human species itself.
Yeah. Well, hey, we got about 4 minutes. Is it possible, Oscar, for you to again make that noise again? People don't like
it. Here we go. Ready?
Yeah.
The one I'm holding is from the Chancay culture, which is about 800 AD. It's a black polychrome. It has a double-headed owl, which is a shamanic medicine totem. And it has a spout with a little, you know, whistle mouthpiece to it, with a little hole in the behind the old double-headed owl's head. I'm gifted to be by my mentor, Don Celso Rojas Palomino from Salas Chiclayo, who I pronounced with from 69 to 82. This is part of his altar ground, his shamanic healing space.
That's definitely an interesting family, man. I'm telling you, my dog was like, "What in the world?"
He didn't bark, did he?
I don't know how your speakers were or how your headphones were, Jeffrey. Did you hear any overtone in it?
I'm on a speaker phone on like a VTech kind of phone.
Okay.
I
have some good headphones on. It's not as good as being in its presence, you know. But I could definitely hear the overtone in it.
Well, the intention was to transmit this sound in a way that would become a trigger, become a catalyst, or the awakening in one's connection to the shining one. So I'm certain that those who receive the sound in a way as medicine, will become elevated. Will awaken in a way. You know what? It's all about intention and doing things with love. Done from a place of love, send out everything you send out, and it can be medicine for and report to the world.
Is there a way I can get that sound anywhere else, or I can get it from you?
You can probably get that to America. I've heard that they sell these on eBay. And on Craigslist. Well, the name in Spanish is, and you have to put their, it's S-I-L-L-A-B-A-O-D-O-R-E-S. S-I-L-L-A-B-O-R-E-S, which are, whistles. And then you have to put Cibadores and then pre-Columbian. Pre-Columbian Cibadores.
Fake ones. They're not fake ones.
They're models. Yeah, they're models. Nothing like having one that you've been used generationally from hand to hand. Used at the ceremony. At the same time, once again, attention. If your attention is pure, the sound is going to be just as powerful medicine for the world.
Name one more time. The first part of the silver address.
It's S as in Sam, I as in Iris, L as in Lois, B as in Bob, A as in Andrew, D as in David, O as in Oscar, R as in Robert, E as in Ed, S as in Dally. Dally.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out.
See what I'll notice, yeah.
We're going to go on break for about 8 minutes, and we'll be back with the rest of the show. Oscar, we normally do 2 hours. Are you good for another 45 minutes or so after we come back from break?
I didn't realize it was 2 full hours, but I can believe I can... Yeah, I can swing it friendly. Let's just play it by ear and see where we go.
Sounds good. All right, everybody. I appreciate it. It's been great so far. Definitely dig in the vibe. All right, everybody. We'll be back very shortly with the Church of Mavis Radio. And we're going on break, so we'll be back shortly.
The UPRN fan tape shows would like to take a moment to thank our loyal listeners for tuning in to UPRN Talk Radio.com, along with 107.7 FM New Orleans, broadcasting on multiple live platforms like Live U60, Live Ustream, and Shoutcast. UPRN has made the UPRN the longest-running, highly rated, and best source of unique programming that is not afraid of the status quo in alternative media. This station has a solid course of shows and hosts that refuse to get stuck in a rut by be overrun by a groupthink mentality. The station owner, Carlos, and Joe Mataldo lose the value of letting his talented state role of host grow and then in this genre accomplished, which many an alternative radio are striving for, but are at least consistently vomiting. POS is all made possible because of you, the list live that tunes in live every night and tell the difference that independent thinking makes. The best way to show our appreciation is to thank you and continue to allow our listeners the ability to download the archives of all the shows free of charge on iTunes, Podbean, and no SoundCloud fee, no monthly fee, cost to download individual shows, and none of the credits and hassles for donations. That's radio.com. Stick around. There's much more to come with new shows on the way. Feel free to join your favorite show live in the Talk chat room. Easily accessible off radio.com. Share the experience of listening live with other listeners from around the world. So thanks for listening, and thank you for being a part of the UPRN Talk Radio.com family of listeners.
Whoa! Did you hear?
Listen to the Search of Sheba's radio show. Just three by Jeffrey.
Seven.
Friday. Nights. Follow your dream. The high rating. The high strange. Stop.
www.searchofsheba'sradio.com.
For upcoming shows, new parents, news, and show archives.
www.searchofsheba'sradio.com.
Welcome back to the Church of Mavis radio show. Sorry, I was eating a Ritz cracker with jalapeno on it.
I meant to get rid of it before we started. There it went.
Now you've got it up your nose, right?
I like it. That burn in the mouth is good for radio.
yeah.
Dragon fire in the mouth.
Well, we're back with Oscar, and I guess I wanted to talk about the Earth some, and I know Wham wanted to talk about it, but as far as what's the view from your perspective, Oscar, of the state of the Earth right now? Is it as bad as everybody's making it out to be? And also, what can we do to help facilitate or to heal if that's what it truly needs?
Well, bad is a value judgment on an energetic event. Anything that is negative or even painful is really an interpretation of an energetic event. So if one can distance oneself from being the victim and understand that we have the power to volunteer rather than to experience being at the brunt of a crisis, of a breakdown, of a tragedy, we're able to manage it with less suffering and less destruction. So I'm confident that in the midst of the, you know, climate, you know, miasm that we're experiencing on this planet and the devastating wars and conflicts that are around, the, you know, human trafficking and sexual abuse that's occurring rampantly, and all of the heinous acts that that humankind is capable of purporting, that there is behind it all a birthing, a gestating of a new life, a new level of sacred relationship between humankind and the natural world. And we're starting to, if you look at the other side of the coin, if you go beyond catastrophe, which is what everybody sees in the news, this catastrophe, and you look at the benestrophe, which is instead of turning bad, turning good, there's a lot of good stuff that is being done out in the world. And there's a resurgence of shamanic arts and ceremonial practices and ritual medicine offerings that are waking people up to this sense of belongingness with a web of life that is much greater than ourselves. And we feel interdependent, and we feel bonded, and we feel as the Earth herself, Gaia, Pachamama, whatever you want to call her, that she is a conscious, sentient being that is our home, and that we are the custodians of it, and we must take care of her for the seven generations, not just for us, but for the seven generations. In indigenous medicine ways, we understand that our thoughts, our words, and our actions should always take in consideration their impact seven generations from now. And if we can start to embrace that mindset, that heart place, and which I see happening now, positive transformation will occur. The birth will be complete. It may be bloody, like a lot of births are. Births do not proceed without some blood and some screaming. Yet overall, we are in a process of giving birth to a new species of humankind, which I would call almost galacticus, or galactic humans. We're going to be part more of the Milky Way, of our galaxy or our universe, rather than just our planetary system. So if you can tease out from my words an answer to your question, brother, good for you. Those who can't, good for them too. And that's where I leave it.
What do you think, Wham, about the Earth and the state of it and what he just shared?
Well, no, I actually, I mean, that's what the natives here have been saying. You know, I have, you know, there's the teacher that has exposed me to these whistles, and then I have a couple of other native teachers here one woman is a Mohican elder, and she every day on Facebook she pretty much posts exactly what Oscar just said. and she does these incredible exercises that come from her tradition and from a variety, other Native traditions here in the Northeast that she's connected to, just different visualizations, different chants, just what she, the way she calls it is, because what she says is that we're, we're in the midst of what feels to us sort of like a hurricane. And what's important to remember is that in every hurricane, there's an eye. And you have to, in the midst of this chaos, you have to practice. And it's a practice, you have to practice being one of those beings that can be stable, and hold the vision and hold the faith of this rebirth or this new birthing. Because it's not going to be pretty sometimes, and it's going to seem very scary, but I've been doing better at it. She has these great meditations that one of the things that has been very helpful for me personally is connecting to the Native teachers that are emerging here. There's been here in the Northeast, there has been this sudden just eruption of Native people that have been here, that have always been here, that New Yorkers have ignored, but there's also Natives that are coming back to this area, whose ancestors are coming back. I mean, just what was it? It was on the new moon in October. On the new moon in October, we did a healing ceremony by the hospital, and there was a consortium of various Algonquin peoples and some Mohawks that had come down, and these were people that in the past had sort of been at war, traditionally. But they all got together, and they did a healing, a Delaware or Muncie healing song that had been passed down for the last over 300 years since the Muncie were driven out of this area, and they sang the song for the first time in 300 years. So it was, I've learned it. It's a great song. So it's like there's this incredible explosion of this awareness. I think
you're getting a little low. I don't know what it is, but you're a little low.
Huh?
I don't know if it's the Skype or your headset or what. I can hear you, but it's straining a little.
Well, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm not speaking right into the microphone or something. But anyway, I agree with Oscar. It's like I'm very grateful for and the woman who does this. Her name's Attaqua, and I'm very, very grateful to the stuff that she puts out every day, because. I've been raised a good American, and you pay attention to the sensational crap on the news, and it helps you, and it really encourages you to forget that there's this incredible stuff going on.
Thanks for sharing that, Wim. And if I may add that in the Andean mystical tradition, we understand that these earth cycles or world eras, which we call Pachacutis, P-A-C-H-A, Pacha world, space, time, realm, ultimately it's a state of consciousness, like the Tibetan notion of a bardo. And then Kuti, K-U-T-I, means reversal or transformation. So it's world reversal or cosmic transformation. It comes in cycles. And we're moving from the Auka Pacha, or the time of darkness and night, the Iron Age, back into the Koripacha, or the Age of Gold, or the New Dawning, similar to the transition from the Kali Yuga in Hinduism to the Sat Yuga, to the Age of of bliss, and we have this notion of the taripaipacha, or the era where of re-encounter, where people from all skin colors and all cultural and backgrounds and ideological persuasions will come together to break bread at the table of the pachayachachik, of the world teacher, which is no one but oneself, one's awakened, illumined self, and that we will learn to share the bounty that the earth has been able to provide us without hoarding, without creating territorial wars, without needing to have the haves and the have-nots. And this is the way our ancestors were able to manage the days where the Shangri-Las, the Shambhalas, the El Dorados, the lost cities that we hear about in mythic legend were truly places on this earth. And we have just become forgetful of this. There's ample evidence strewn across this good earth of temple sites and extraordinary architectural accomplishments that even with our most advanced technologies we would have not been able to replicate. And those are remnants of a much more advanced age than we have ever been able to attain as modern humans. And all of this is known. My mentor, Don Benito Coriwaman Vargas from the town of Wasau, he was my secondary mentor from the highland tradition of the Papokuna. He emphasized to me that the Taripaipacha, the age of re-encounter, was upon us. And it all started with the first seeding of this planet by the Anunnakian about 1 billion years ago. You know, our Earth became habitable, recognizable as a planet with land masses still forming about 1 billion years ago. And 5 million years ago, it was habitable with water evaporating into air. And then through seeds and spores that came in through meteors, you know, and the carbonaceous chondrites, the organic compounds, and microscopic particles bombarded the earth, and boom, all of a sudden there was, you know, a surface teeming with life. And that's when our star relatives took advantage of that panspermia and began to develop the human species here. And we're the end result of that. And some of us have this in our DNA. We have this neurogenetic memory of being seeded from the stars billions, millions of years ago, and it's awakening in a lot of people. Anyway, I may be going off track a little bit with our conversation, but I thought I'd throw that in there.
Hey, it's okay.
It's all good.
That's the way we roll.
Cool. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm very excited about the future of this planet, to tell you the truth. I'm looking forward to navigating it with laughter, with love, and with good shamanic ritual, you know?
Well, how do you differentiate from the... I mean, I watch the news, and it's like I try not to, but I end up watching it anyway, and it's the way things are right now, it's a horror show. I mean, it really is. It's a horror movie, a lot of things. So what are some advice to protect ourselves from that, or do we need to just stay away from the news completely and what's really happening in the world to be in this state of grace of spirituality in the earth? Because I mean, it just, if you really look at it, it's insanity, some of the crazy stuff that's going on right now between, you know, ISIS and the school shootings and gender Hitler, Donald Trump. I call
right,
it
right, right. I'm glad you are a supporter of good old Bernie Sanders. That made my heart leap. That guy, that he's a contactee for sure.
he's the only politician I think that I've heard speak that brought tears to my eyes. You can just tell it.
He makes sense. He makes total sense. He talks reason, logic. He's a rational socialist with a good heart, and he's got good solutions. If people would just understand that the capitalist system isn't working, and that we're not going to go turn into a communist, totalitarian regime if Bernie gets elected, but we're going to be like a country that knows how to distribute its wealth properly. I'm all for it myself, man. He's a good man. You know?
That's for my votes going, but I do feel like it's designed for Hillary. And I want Bernie to win. Of course, I'm voting for him, but it seems like the forces at play want Hillary in. But I would love it if Bernie won. He may surprise everybody, and that's what he's doing now. But I'm hoping he's the one that wins. But I still, you know, with the Democratic Party and stuff, they seem like they're specifically aligned for Hillary and for her. So they've been kind of treating him kind of crappy. And the media treats him crappy, too. Like, I guess MSNBC talks about him a lot. But, I mean, CNN, like some of these other stations, the way they talk about Trump and Hillary, like they barely talk to him at all. He's like totally getting lost.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's all the pocketbooks, you know. It's Big Brother, man. They don't want to let go of the control. So, you know, it's all changing, bro. So back to your thing, yeah, the Earth, if you look at the news, and as a matter of fact, yes, I recommend a news fast for people who are doing the work, the great work, capital G, capital W. If you do not unplug from the craziness out there and don't feed your mind with it, a spaciousness, an expansion is available in which you can go ahead and the service nature that we have as human beings to do well can be channeled into a battered woman's shelter, into a soup kitchen, into taking out being a big brother to a homeless child, to a fatherless or motherless child. There's countless ways of bringing balance to all the craziness, yet it has to start within one's self. No one's going to be able to change the planet by themselves, but they can change themselves, and they can also inspire change in one other soul. So if we keep it simple and keep it real and keep it down to earth and avoid being, you know, intoxicated by the negativity on the media and do good deeds, simple deeds, you know, planting a tree, for God's sake, with a little kid, little by little, it'll be like the 100th monkey effect. It'll just, you know, spiral into a planet of beauty. It's the only game in town, brother. What else is there to do? You know, get pissed off and burn and go and pick up a weapon and go to Syria? I don't think so. I don't think that's going to solve anything.
Definitely. And definitely. So when it comes to diet, do you eat meat? Are you vegetarian, or do you eat meat too? Or what's your diet?
I try to. My wife is a vegan and mostly raw foods person, so she's got me on the straight and narrow. Yet, you know, when I'm among my native peoples of Peru, they'll serve me guinea pig, and I'll eat guinea pig. You know, that's a delicacy. I'll also eat suri, which are tree grubs that they fry, and it tastes just like bacon, and you pop them in your mouth. So. You know, I'll if I'm in Rome, I'll do it the Romans. You know, it's the right thing to do. Yet I don't cook guinea pig at home or eat tree grubs at home. And once in a while, I still have a craving for a good piece of fish. But for the most part, we try to do some juicing and wheatgrass and all that stuff.
Cool.
You know, I'm 60. I'm going to be 65. Got to take care of the body a little.
My girlfriend's been feeding me tofu and stuff. It's not bad. I've been getting used to it. But definitely.
Yeah, man.
You're doing better than the pizza, huh?
Oh, I ate pizza. I love pizza, but that gluten is.
Yeah, I was talking to Jeffrey because there's this whole thing about how he waits for the pizza guy to come.
Yeah, I could eat pizza right about now.
Diet is a very important, but diet is a very important place to begin your spiritual sadhana or your spiritual practice with. It's one of the hardest things to discipline oneself, to break the pattern, you know. You can get your diet under control, yeah.
I'm trying to lose some weight. I'm 6 foot two and about 265, and I need to.
No, you're a small boy.
But it's weird because when I'm like 240 or 220, I look skin and bones. I have like these weird big giant Sasquatch bones or something. But I need to lose some weight. It's in my stomach, and I've been trying. I'm working on it.
Stop eating at night, man. That's the trick, and no carbs.
No carbs. Stop eating
at night. Do a little exercise.
What kind of exercise?
Just do a little bit of exercise. Just walk. I mean, I have found that just walking.
I do that. I walk.
Just
I walk a pretty good bit. I walk a pretty good bit. I mean, nothing too crazy, but I do take walks a lot through the trails through here.
Yeah.
Yeah, stationary bike or just a bicycle ride. That's good too. You know, it's just a matter of retraining yourself, Jeffrey. I heard you had this new Russian girlfriend. Lana was her name or something like that?
Yes, she's here right now listening with us. She's not going to
sure
talk, but she's here.
I'm sure she'll. She wants the best for you, so, you know, have her work you out if you get my drift.
Yeah, we go walking together and stuff, and I can't be off the trail as far as walking so fast. I can't keep up. I'm like, slow down.
That's why. The Russian women I've met are always seem very fit, all of them. You know, so I would take guidance from her.
Definitely. That's why I've jokingly said she's my fitness trainer. Well, let me see. Are you good for a little bit longer, or you need to depart, Oscar? What are you up for?
I can do another 10 minutes. We just finished doing a seminar here in South Florida, and we have a community that we've been working with for years. So, a couple of members of that community, we had a big party here at our home, and they're gone. And then a couple of them spent the night and they're staying till tomorrow. So, I have these guests that are my wife's. Keys, she calls them, her buds. So
cool.
You know, I have to be with them. Yet, a few more minutes. I have a question, brother. How did you come across Healing Light as the Sounds True audio book? How did that come to your hands and to your space?
I have had others, people from Sounds True. Sandra Ingerman's been on, and she has a thing.
Yeah, I was with her.
And also Jose Luis Stevens, did I say his name? Or is it Jose or Jose Luis Stevens?
Jose. Yeah.
And
I was just with them both at Jose's place in Santa Fe, New Mexico, just the week before last.
Nice. Well, I came across their CDs on there. So I was like, wow, I've never, you know, it's hard to come across the shamanism teachings on, you know, CD like this. So I kept checking for shamanism stuff, and every, you know, once in a while, and yours popped up. I was like, well, great, I got to check this out now.
Cool. Well, I appreciate it, brother.
And it's great. I love the Sounds True shamanism. These teachings and stuff, put them on CD like this, it's just great. I'd hope they keep, you know, doing more and...
That's the idea. I mean, if people are interested, they can buy it. It's on Amazon, too. You know, you can just, you know, go into Amazon and buy those there. And, you know, that those are, and if people want to find out more about the community work we do, you can go to our website. I can give you that information later if you're interested.
Cool. Well, go ahead and give us the website link now if you want, if you can go ahead and give us that.
Yeah, if you're interested in, there's a couple of things that I deeply appreciate, which is, you know, check out the Heart of the Healer. It's Heart of the Healer, all one word, www.heartofthehealer.org. And there you can see the work that we're doing all over the world, really. And find more information if you're interested in apprenticing in these traditions. that you can do. I have various programs out there, sanctioned teachers that I've been that's been working with me for some of them over 25 years. So we have a really solid community of shamanic practitioners, and we do a lot of earth honoring pilgrimages to sacred sites and things like that. And then if you're interested in apprenticing in the comfort of your home by reading or these audio tapes, you can order them through our website or go to Amazon.com and just put in my name, Oscar Muriel Quesada, or Don Oscar. And if you like it, shoot a review. That always helps. Thanks so much for allowing me to give this little... I'm really bad plugging myself, but my wife is insistent that it just does good in the world to get more people galvanized to do this evolutionary work. So I'm doing it, and thanks for giving me the space to do this.
Well, we definitely appreciate it, Oscar, and loved having you on, and keep me in the loop in the future when you have a new book out. And your wife seems wonderful from speaking to her email. She's pro you for sure. And definitely have enjoyed it, and I'd love to have you on again in the future. Thanks, man, and we appreciate it.
And by the way, you'll be pleased to know that because of the good work you're doing in Aini and Sacred Reciprocity, I made a little donation to your GoFundMe page. So I hope that helps out a little bit to keep your good work going in the world, Ben.
All righty. I appreciate that very much. And we'll definitely be in touch. Take care, man, and thanks for doing
Continue doing the good work.
Much love. Thanks. Wham, I was going to call you Wahoo, but it's Wham.
Wham is the easiest way to do it.
Wham, and to Joe Montaldo and Jeffrey, thanks a lot. Much love to all of you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
I guess, let me see, we'll talk about some upcoming guests. We still got about 37 after. We're in 5 minutes till 9. So let's see what guests we have coming up. Let me find the schedule. That's the wrong thing. Oh, next week is January 15th. Posey Gilbert, and he's an African-American alien abductee, Posey Gilbert.
Far out.
And I know Wham has a lot to add about that from her case files, so to speak.
Yeah.
A lot of African-American contactee cases. I don't know, the only other African-American about UFOs that I've ever interviewed is Prophet Yahweh. Of course, that's a pretty wild interview. Of course, he's passed away now. God rest his crazy soul. But
yeah.
It's rare. I only know Posey Gilbert, the Prophet Yahweh, and then there's some, who's that guy that owned Howard Stern, Riley, something?
Oh, Riley. Oh, yeah.
Those are the only black dudes I know who talk about aliens. There may be some others, but those are the only ones I know.
I'll have to pull out my dissertation, because I have this whole thing about Riley Martin that I do in it, that I talk about, you know, about his book that he wrote, and Malachi Z. York, and he was another one, and he's in prison now here in New York on 16 consecutive charges of child abuse and molestation or something.
God, so really? Riley Martin is?
No, not Riley Martin. No, Malachi Z. York.
Oh, okay. And who is that exactly?
He was a... he was the leader of a group that was called the Nuwabian Moors, and they were an extraterrestrial based a UFO religion that at one point developed actually had purchased some land in Georgia. They looked sort of like a cross between you know, the raw aliens and some kind of theme park. But it was, they had like built this giant pyramid, and they were at, it had this whole complex, and they were, and the they made the state of Georgia really uncomfortable, because you know, here are some you know, a whole community of black folks that are, that believe that they weren't anti-white in the way that some groups like that are. They weren't like the 5 percenters that, you know, believe that all white people are demonic, and but you know, they were kind of to themselves and intense, and so the state of Georgia worked really, 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 really hard to try to deny them building permits, and tried to deny their tax exempt status, which you can't really do that because it's a federal thing, but you know, sometimes Georgia doesn't like to admit that the federal government exists. You know, so there were all kinds of interesting things that happened. And then there was sort of a schism in the group, and one of the members of the schism accused him of molesting children, because he had originally come from New York, he actually originally had been gathering his flock in the city.
Yeah.
And then they'd moved down south, and so he was indicted on like all of these charges and extradited to New York. So that's where he is. He's in the penitentiary right now.
Crazy. That's some crazy, crazy, crazy.
But he had this there was this incredible kind of literature that he created. He was clearly influenced by the 5 percenters, but he was his own thing, and he created this entire like extraterrestrial literature that I quote from and talk about, and I talk about Sun Ra, you know, Sun Ra the jazz musician. He considered himself a contactee.
Nice. I'll have to get his name from you. So what do you think? Do you think he was into kids, or was that a setup?
I have read all of the aspects of it, and I think it might have been a little bit of both. I think that because, you know, if you know Malachi Z. York's background, he was kind of one of those charismatic kind of con guys who redid himself, you know, as soon as it looked like people were going to kind of get on to him, he would sort of like redo himself in a new way. But he also had some interesting ideas. I mean, genuinely interesting ideas, and who knows? I mean, I don't know if he had experiences or not. I mean, one of the individuals that I interviewed for the dissertation actually had connections with his community. She was not a Nuwabian Moor herself, but she had had some contact experiences herself of some type, and they were the first people in the city that she came in contact with that she felt like she could talk to, because she was a black woman. So she knew some people in the community. So she was the one who sort of put me in contact, you know, with some of the information. But I do think that I don't know, he was a con guy, but I do think that the person who filed the charges, or you know, who made the accusations, was a piece of work too, you know what I mean? And there was some evidence that that person was trying to get some of the power and glory for themselves in some way. So, you know, it could have been, you know, one of those situations of the pot calling the kettle black, you know. You kind of get
trying to gain control of the cult.
Right. So to speak. Now, I don't know if there are people that are still sort of connected or involved. I haven't checked the web presence for a while, but because the last time that I did, the website that was up, and this was like a year ago, had not been updated in a while. So I don't really know, you know, like who's there. I do know that my academic colleague, Michael Muhammad Knight, he has obtained somehow almost a complete collection of Malachi Z. York's scrolls, and occasionally he'll scan one and put it up on Facebook, you know, and here's these teachings from blah, you know. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, I know I told Posey Gilbert my light being story, and he said he got chills and cried. That light being the light being explanation Oscar gave, that was pretty powerful there.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was good.
Yeah, that was like, wow.
That's good. Yeah.
Slap.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and the thing is about, you know, what you said about, you know, how do you turn the news off? You know, how do you make things more, you know, not dwell so much on the negative? Well, you know, it's something you have to work at all the time. I mean, I'm much better about it than I used to be, but, you know, it's hard. And the truth is that, you know, that's part of the conspiracy of the ego. You know, the ego doesn't want you to have hope. It doesn't want you to, it wants you to really only see shit everywhere, sorry. And, I mean, it really does, you know. So it's really worth working on. You know?
Definitely.
I got this meditation on gold light from this Mohican teacher, Etiqua, and it has really helped me a lot. So maybe I'll Facebook it to you.
Yeah, let me check that out. All right, well, January 22nd, Paul Eno.
Yes.
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 Tell us a bit about Paul Eno, if you would, Lam.
Paul Eno is this really incredible paranormal researcher who has been doing research since the 70s. And he started out working with the Warrens, if you remember the Warrens, who were very famous ghost hunters and exorcists. And he started out working with them, but he went out on his own. He was going to become a priest, but was kicked out of seminary because he was too interested in the paranormal for them to feel comfortable with. So I'm sure that he will talk about that, because that really formed, I think, in some way, his approach to how to look at paranormal information. He's also sort of been one of the mentors for Bill Hall, who was the last guest that we had before we took our break, who was talking about that really interesting place in Litchfield, Connecticut. And Paul Eno has some extraordinary ideas about what the real reality of paranormal phenomena are, and how paranormal phenomena and spiritual growth in particular can be very much linked. So he and his son is a shaman who's been, I guess, undergoing training as a shaman for a number of years through native teachers here. So he definitely takes that kind of approach, you know, the notion that we are all part of one reality, and a lot of times when paranormal activity occurs in an area, it's because for some reason that place is like a door, it's like a gateway, and it's possible to communicate with the past and with the future, because it's all kind of happening at the same time.
Definitely, and that reminds me of him saying about the light beings being us from the future. Looking forward to the Paul Eno interview for sure. January 29th, Ron Felber, Mojave Incident. Jay will be with us for that. February 5th, Steve Patrick Carrington. Jay, that's Bigfoot Cryptics. February 12th, Dan Miller from Georgia. He's got some Bigfoot stuff. Jay will be there with us. Then Wham comes back February 9th with a Verlana TKACZ. It's TKACZ. And we're going to be doing a show on Siberian shamanism.
Oh, that'll be great. So you've got me for all the shaman shows.
Definitely. Cool. And then February 26th, we got Wham with Stacey Brown. Now, Stacey Brown's a well-known Bigfoot guy that's been on Finding Bigfoot, and he won $1 million Bigfoot bounty. I don't think he won. Oh, sorry. Something happened to my throat.
Wow, I need some water on that one. But hold on just a second. My throat cracked there for a second. But anyway, he's Stacey Brown. He's been on Finding Bigfoot and also Million Dollar Bigfoot Bounty. He didn't win the $1 million, but he won like $100,000 for something. It's supposed to be in the next seasons. He had some real crazy thermal video of a Bigfoot that's like amazing that him and his dad got. And he lives around here near me in the Panhandle. But they got like this amazing thermal shot of Bigfoot, and he won that it's on Spike TV, that show or something.
Yeah, maybe we could find a copy of it, because I'd like to see it. I love some of those thermal images.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I can dig it up. It's on YouTube. I'm sure. I would think so. March 4th. We're still scheduling for March, but definitely trying to look for some unique gems and interesting guests always, and usually do a pretty good job of it, if I say so myself.
Oh yeah, you do a great job.
And the shamans are definitely there's not many. I know there's other radio shows that have them on, but it doesn't seem like it sometimes, does it? Like, I know they're there, you just gotta dig for them, I guess. I don't know exactly what ones, but I love it. That's some of my favorite shows ever, those shows.
Yeah, I mean, the teachers that I know here, the medicine woman that has been exposing me to those vessels, you know, that we were talking about. She's an intense woman, but she very much works privately. You know, she's published a couple of books, but they're not widely distributed, and I don't think she's really interested in that. You know, she's interested in doing things just sort of person to person as they come through word of mouth, and that's just how she works. So, I know that she has her own video blog, but she's an interesting person. I mean, she. Like I said, her teacher was Wallace Black Elk, and so she has some great stories.
She has books too.
She's just got a couple of books, and they're not widely available. I mean, you can't get them on Amazon or anything. They're self published, but that's what I mean. I think she's mostly interested in just sort of doing things privately. You know, I don't know how much publicity she really wants. And there are a number of shamans that I know just from around this area that are kind of like that. You know, they'll teach people privately, do sweats or, you know, things like that, but they're not really interested in like writing books and doing that whole kind of shtick, you know. So.
Yeah. Well, I definitely, the more the merrier, but I can understand that point of view too from it. I guess they go solo, so to speak.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's a different way of building community, really, you know. So, and not everybody is, you know, tuned to being a celebrity in a way, you know, to doing that kind of a thing. I mean, you know, even Oscar said it. It's his wife that kind of does this for him. You know.
Definitely, and the more you put yourself out there, you got to deal with the more crazy, I'm sure. So
I know that
from firsthand.
Oh yeah, and for some
no
reason, in the world of like shamanism, you know, you can have like 77 million, you know, like New Agers crawling up your face. You know?
Yeah.
God love you. All these white
Definitely.
People.
Definitely. And let me see. I guess it's 55, so we should be ending this puppy. I'm waiting for a hint from Joe, and we'll close this out.
Mr. Joe,
up next, Supernatural Substation host. Oh man, the name. Aline Pastanio. I've said her name before, but I'm from Georgia. I mess up names pretty fast. But that's Supernatural Substation up next. And I'm waiting for Joe to close us out. Where are you, JoJo? JoJo, don't be a hero. You're supposed to give me a number. He's here somewhere. Who's the guest, Stephanie? Y'all know the guest yet? I'm waiting for the Joe sign to close it out. He might have ran to the casino.
Yeah, well, did he manage to actually move the studio?
I believe he was talking about he was somewhere else. He was talking about some New Orleans something. I'm not sure what's going on with that right now, but I think he did.
I think my understanding was that he was going to try to move it so that it wouldn't be such it wouldn't be so hard for him to make it here before right after work.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'll have to ask him. I think he mentioned something about it earlier when he was talking, but, you know, my brain, it's in it's in the light being birthed.
you're being rebirthed. You're better to fly away.
I got to pick up one of those little frequency jammer things. So that was pretty wild.
Oh, the whistle? Yeah. Just try imagining maybe 15 of them at all kinds of different pitches going at once.
Wow.
And let me tell you, the first time I experienced that, it was like I was laying down because I was, she told us to all lay down. And the first time I experienced that, it was like, I mean, I pretty much almost had an out-of-body experience within about 10 minutes. I mean, literally, you couldn't even help it. I mean, it was like it wasn't the choice, really. You go into this altered state.
Nice. All right, well, on Supernatural Substation is tonight's topic, paranormal research and the fame game.
Fame game. We just talked about the fame game.
Yeah, the fame game. Let me tell you, it's a madhouse out there. That's why I'm pretty much a hermit, and I just stay away from it for the most part until someone bothers me, and then when they bother me,
I scream at them.
Hell will not spare them when they bother me. But, I'm waiting for Joe to give the signal, or should I just... end the show and wait.
Well, I don't know. You don't want any dead air.
Stephanie, do you know where Joe is?
Oh, you in contact with Stephanie?
Oh, Stephanie Benetti's in the chat room.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm going to take a few minutes to say feel the burn, vote for Bernie Sanders, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Of course, the Democratic Party just tried to screw him over and set him up. That's what they do because they're nasty. So now I'm neither left, and I definitely ain't right, that's for sure. But left can screw itself, too. I'm the middle bird.
You are the middle bird.
I'm the middle bird, that's right.
The independent middle bird.
The independent middle bird, for sure. Joe's been abducted by aliens, I think. He's probably eating a steak. Some, who knows, sweet potato pie. Well, I guess we'll just sit here until he comes back, because I don't want to just stop talking. Then there'll be like this big 20-minute thing
it'll
of no
like
one talking
dead
at the end of the show.
Dead air. Well, yeah. You know, if he's like really late, then he'll owe us.
Yeah, I got to write Posey Gilbert and remind him that he has a show Friday. Posey Gilbert. He seems pretty nice. He kind of got a Samuel Jackson thing going. Older Samuel Jackson.
Does he have a book?
No, sure don't.
Ooh, so how'd you find out about him?
He's on my Facebook, and I just seen him around town, around the groups and stuff.
hanging out, and he talked to us on the during the break and stuff. So
there he is. Hey, Joe.
Joe's back from Margaritaville.
All righty.
Everybody. All right, we'll see you all next Friday with Posey Gilbert, African-American abductee. That's going to be interesting. Thanks, Wham, and thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Yowza.
Introducing the award-winning Hopper, only from Dish. Watch what you can do with it. Want to hide your...